Proverbs chapter 10, please. We're studying together the book of Proverbs, and now we come down to the big book of the Proverbs. Now, I want every person in the building who is unmarried and under 21 to stand. Every person in the building who is unmarried and under 21 to stand. All right, in the first place, let me just say a few words to you. I'm glad you're here. It's a joy to see you in church on Wednesday night. Now, this is your assignment. You are to have a notebook of some kind next Wednesday night here in the service. Some kind of a notebook. You are to take notes tonight if you have a piece of paper. If not, you get them from someone. we're going to list everything that we admonish to do for a few chapters. So I want you to bring a notebook just for this. Not a loose leaf, but a spiral, the kind that you can keep, just for this. And you will have listed hundreds, I mean that, over 100 anyway, of admonitions to a young person. So every person that can write who is under 21, and Charles, you can have Bob write it for you, and every person that can write who is under 21, I want you to have your special notebook for the book of Proverbs next Wednesday night. Now, if you don't have it, you get an F on this assignment. And you certainly would not want that. So every one of you, bring you a notebook next Wednesday night. Thank you. Be seated, please. Proverbs is about, first, let's pray. Father, teach us how to teach and how to learn thy word and help us to know what it well, what to pass over tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Proverbs is divided into three basic sections. The first section, as you know, is in chapter 1, verses 1 through 6, which is the introduction. You have this already written in your Bible. The second division is chapter 1, verse 7 through chapter 9. And the third division starts with the beginning of chapter 10. Now, from chapter 10 through the entire book of Proverbs, we simply have a collection of proverbs and sayings. It is not in any chronological order. There is no story involved. It is not interesting reading as far as continuity of thought is concerned. Each verse may be an entirely different thought. We may talk about one thing and then turn and talk about another thing. But each one has a pungent truth for us to learn, and especially is it true for young people. Now, in some manuscripts, there is a first proverb and a second proverb, just like this 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, 1 Kings, and 2 Kings, 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. In some manuscripts, there's a first Proverbs and second Proverbs. Now, in these original manuscripts, first Proverbs is Proverbs 1 through 9, and second Proverbs begins with chapter 10. There is a definite division. Whether or not there should be two different books, I do not know, and I could not care less. But there is a definite division. Now, thus far, in the first 10 chapters, what is the basic thing we've been discussing? Somebody is talking to somebody else. A father is talking to a son. And the thing that he says so often, the two words, the way he addresses the son, he says, my son. And we listed at least 10 of those where the father gave advice to the son. Now, we also learned in chapters 7, 8, and 9, that chapters 7 and 9 are competing for a young man. Remember that? In chapter 7, we have who is competing for a young man's life? Strange, a strange woman, or a strange woman. In chapter 9, who competes for the life of this young man? Wisdom. And so we find two suitors seeking a young man's wife. One in chapter 7 is the strange woman, and one in chapter 9 is wisdom. Now then, I want you to notice a little bit of review, a preview about the remaining portion of the book of Proverbs. Many, many of the Proverbs are what we call an antithetic statement. You've heard the word antithesis. It's the same word. An antithetic statement. Here's what it means. Look at verse 1. A wise son, the Proverbs of Solomon, a wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. Now, an antithetic statement, or an antithesis, is something that says exactly the opposite in the next statement. For example, it starts off saying, a wise son, in the first part. The last part starts off, a foolish son. It ends up saying, father, in the first one, and mother, in the second one. A perfect antithetic statement, or antithesis, is a statement where every word is opposite from the second statement, or the two statements are exact opposites in every word. But now, many of the Proverbs have the same thing. In fact, the word that is used, I guess, more than any other word in Proverbs is the word but. Look at it in verse 2. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivers from death. And here's what it amounts to. You say, son, if you'll be careful, you say, be careful crossing the street, and you will live. But if you don't, you might get killed. You see? He takes the same thing, turns it inside out. Same statement, but reverses it. Be a good boy. No, don't be a bad boy, or I'll thank you. Be a good boy, and I'll buy you a nice thing from. You see? It is an antithesis, an antithetic statement, which means that the last act is in direct opposite to the first act. It is turning it the same thing. It says the same thing, but it turns it inside out and approaches it from the negative or a different position. You follow me? Now, Proverbs, look on that. Just pick out any verse you want to, almost, with verse 24. The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted. And verse 27, the fear of the Lord prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be short. You see? Fear of God prolongeth days. Years of the wicked shall be short. You do good, you live long. You do bad, you live short. You see, an antithetic statement or an antithesis, and Proverbs is full of them. Now, the truth is simply underlining the truth. This is one thing I do that I think most preachers ought to do more of. I think one reason I don't memorize my sermons, and one reason I do not use manuscripts when I preach, is because I want to say the same thing about a dozen times in every sermon. You listen to me carefully on a Sunday sermon or a Sunday night sermon, and you'll hear the same statement made over and over and over and over and over and over. What I preached on Sunday morning, anybody remember? Oh boy, this is going to be embarrassing. Anybody for a chance know what I preached on Sunday morning? Yes, sir. What? The light of whom? Of the Lord. Yes, and how many of you remember that? Well, it's wonderful that a few of you remember it. Well, it's an humbling thing, I'll let you assure. The delight of the Lord. How many times did I mention the word delight? Every scripture I read or quoted had the word delight in it, didn't it? And over and over, the delight, 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 delight. Now, a few enough of you remembered it, me repeating it. If I had repeated it, I guess none of you remembered it. Sunday night, I forgot myself. What? Oh, yes, a soft, having a soft heart. Yes, the Lord maketh my heart soft. Proverbs 23:16. Now, how many times did I say over and over again, a soft heart, a soft heart, a soft heart, a soft heart? And so I like to underline things. I think far too many preachers go through a sermon and they say, we should not fail to pray. And I think you ought to turn it inside out and say, you better not fail to pray. And I think you ought to say, what's going to happen to you if you don't pray? And I think you ought to turn around and say, what will happen to you if you do pray? I think it's the same thing, and over and over and over and over and over again. And so the Proverbs says that. He says, you should do this thing, and here's what happens. If you live right, righteous life, you live a long time. Then he goes on to say, but if you don't, you'll have your day short, you see. So he makes the same statement from another approach. Now then, I want us to notice these, and I want you to write down, young people, I want you to write down everything that the wise man says you ought to do and be, and I'll give you the ones to write down as we come to them. I want you to start with verse 2. Verse 2. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. Now, you help me. You help me. What would you think would be the big teaching of this verse? Let me read it again. Now, you listen carefully. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. Now, you always get the main teaching from the first statement, you see, and the second statement is enlarging on or in a thing another way the same thing. All right? Treasures of wickedness profit nothing, but righteousness delivereth from death. Who'd like to guess is what that is? They're saying in one statement, what is that teaching us? Raise your hand, I'll call on you. Yes, sir. All right, that's good. Be honest, but a little part of being honest. In fact, you just might be honest over the entire proverb. But what phase of honesty? Who'd like to just say it again? Don't be embarrassed. If you're wrong, don't feel bad about it. All right. It says sin there pays. Of what particular sin? Look at the first statement. Jesse. Raise your hand. Right. Evil gain. Now here's what I want you to write down, young people. Get nothing wrongly. That's it. That's it. That's what the thought, what he's saying. Get nothing wrongly. It is never right to get anything, no matter how good the object is, if you do it in the wrong way. Now the statement I want you to write down, number one, get nothing wrongly. Get nothing wrongly. Now basically he's talking about money. Now, but anything. Suppose a person gets an A on their report card, young people, an A on their report card, but he got it by cheating. You reckon that's what this means here? Huh? You think that's what it means? I think so. Who said yeah? You better say yes, sir, or I'll wring your neck next time. We're supposed to say what?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. That's right. And if it's no, it's what?
No.
No, sir. That's right. I like the way you do that. You're talking about keeping it. Right. We don't need you. Don't that follow me? And So what the writer is saying here is nothing is right if you get it wrongly. Better not to have money than use wrong methods to get it. Better not to have a good grade. I'd rather have a C that's mine than an A that somebody else's. There's a fellow in my class in Greek came to me after the year was up, and he said, I know what you made. I said, why? And he said, well, I looked over your shoulder block, and he said, I'll never care much about you anymore. And he said, I made a C, and it's your fault with the top of everything you put on your paper. And he blamed me for his sorry grade, you see. Truth is, I didn't make a C. I made an A. But the thing I'm trying to say is nothing is right if it's gotten wrongly. Nothing is right if it's gotten wrongly. That's the first thing. Making money, that's all right. But if you make it wrongly, then the money is no good. That's one reason why in church circles, that's one reason why that we ought to do everything we do rightly. Look, something is not right or wrong by how it turns out. It's right or wrong according to whether it's right or wrong. It's either right or wrong based on whether it's right or wrong. I was talking to a fellow one time about a certain organization I wouldn't join. Why, you said, this organization's a niche. It's built in the Bible. I said, okay, it's what it is, but I won't join it. Of course, the Bible says, Jesus said in the first place, in secret, I've done nothing. And the second place, I can't be yoked up together, folks that are not believers. That's my, if you don't agree with me, that's your business, but that's what, I couldn't join it. And the fellow said, well, wait a minute. He said, they support orphanages. I said, well, now, the fact that somebody supports orphanages, before the fellow started a tavern out here and used the prophets to support orphanages, would that make the tavern good? Well, of course it wouldn't, because he'll send more folks to the orphan zone than he'll support. You see? So listen, now, young people, if you'll get this, build your life on it, it'll change you 10,000 times and make you live right more than anything else in the world. And that is, it is not right or wrong according to how many folks get saved, how much good is done, how many folks are fed. Something is right or it's wrong on one basis, and that is it right or wrong to do? That's what the writer is saying. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing. In the end, you won't have any profit. If you get something wrongly, in the end, you'll have no profit. That's number one. Number two, and look at verse 3. Now I want you to guess it first. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to vanish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to vanish, but he casteth away the substance of the wicked. Now what's the state, what's the time to teach us here? Raise your hand up on. Yes, sir. The Lord will provide for his own. Right. All right. Write it down. Number two. The Lord will provide for his own. Absolutely so. Oh, if you could ever get this real good, it'd save you a lot of fret and worry. You know that? The Lord will provide for his own. Now back to you young people. Proverbs is written to you. You simple ones, the Bible says. Proverbs is back to you. Okay, you said, well, if I don't stop and park on a dark road with a certain fellow, I won't get a husband. The Lord will provide. The Lord will provide. and you'd better wait till you get $1 of ours anyway. That's the one you need, and that's the only one that's going to worth anything. The Lord will provide. Now, I've been preaching for almost 21 years. I have taught this Bible. I have taught it and taught it. I have worn out a Bible a year for years, year after year after year. I have studied it. I have read it. I have taught it. But I do not recall that many people coming to me who live for God, read the Bible, come to prayer meeting on Wednesday night, come to all the services of the church, five, pray, have family altars, who come to me eating some food. That's strange, isn't it? Now, it may be tonight, and if you need some food tonight, and you qualify for that, we'll give you a basket of food, won't we, Brother Fred? We'll let you have it. I'm not saying that if you get hungry, but I'm simply saying, I have never, I don't recall any, but I'm going to stretch it a bit and play it safe and say not over that many times in 21 years. As people come to me and said, Pastor, we come to Sunday school, morning service, evening service, Wednesday evening service, we have family altar, we tithe, we read our Bible every day, we have prayers, we say grace at the table, and Pastor, we need some food. Isn't that strange? Or is it? The Lord will provide. Same old story over and over again. Pastor, I went off into sin. I got in trouble. I didn't listen to another. I didn't listen to the preacher. I didn't take the advice of those who loved me and cared. Now, Pastor, I'm in trouble. Could you help me? Well, of course we will. We're glad to help you. That's what we're here for. And we never turn down anybody. I made this statement one night many years ago. I told about a fellow I'd gone on a note for him, and I said, we never turned down anybody. And you'd be surprised how many folks I had asked the service want me to go on their notes. Now, that's one thing I'm not going to do for you. But we'll give you food. If you're a fake, we'll give you food. If you're a liar, if you say you need food, we'll give you food. We never turn down anybody. We try to feed everybody. But I'm simply saying that God promises he'll care for his own. Oh, okay? Verse 3. I'm sorry, verse 4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Now, bear in mind again, you see these verses seemingly jump from one subject to another, and I'm trying just to get you to write down the subject for every verse and make it a part of your life. All right, let's read it again. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Now, what is it teaching us here? Right. Write it down. Number 3. I'm letting you word it. I have different words, but I'm letting you word it. Don't be lazy. Write this down too. Do your best. Do your best. Now you notice it says he becomes poor that beateth with a slack hand. Doesn't say he doesn't work at all. He's just doing it halfway. He's dealing, but a slack hand. He's working, but not doing his best. He's just doing enough to get by. He could make an A, but he makes a C. Did you hear what I said? He could make an A, but this is talking to you. You got enough sense to make an A. Look, if you have enough sense to make an A and you make a C, you're not a good Christian. Did you hear me? Did you get me?
Yes, sir.
All right. Are you going to do it? No, I won't ask you that. Okay. Look, if you'll get to, if everybody, but especially young people, will get this one thing, whatever you do, do it the very best you can. Describe what it'll do for you. Look, if you are a cotton picker, you be the best cotton picker. When we were ninth in the world and trying to get to be six, that number 6, 7, and 8 kept me awake at night. And those first five are still bothering me. Boy, I don't want to be as big as that, do you? I mean, if I were a free cleaner, I'd want a people to pass by and say, I wonder who cleans these trees. Boy, this is the cleanest tree. Now listen to me. Whatever, Paul said, whatever thy hand findeth to do it with all thine own. Be a good whatever you are. Now look, it's not a shame to be something that's not the best profession, but it's a shame for you not to be the best you can be in your profession. If you are a carpenter, I used to be a carpenter. For 18 months, I laid oak floors. I mean, I've been over like this, and laid oak floors all day long. Looked like this, all day long, with a big old hammer, and I started off. Every time I lay a board, the wall would move back two boards. And I thought, I'll never make it. But I said, if it, first day I got through, I had 40 blisters on one hand. 40. Next day I just put a glove over that hand. The glove, I think, had blisters the next day. I need a, but I said, I'll do it! I'll do it! You know, Bill, 18 months later, I was making, I get this, this is in 1944 and 5. I was making $32 to $40 a day laying oak floor. Most money I've ever made in my life. Laying oak floor. And I was laying more oak floor than any man in Dallas, Texas. Was that because I muscle bound? Good night? No. I wouldn't even lay floor in my t-shirt and want to reveal what I didn't have. But before, every time I'd see a fellow hammering twice as fast as I was, he'd grind at me. I worked at J.C. Penney's store, and when I was later on another cottage, worked at J.C. Penney's store. I worked from 12 o'clock noon to 5 o'clock quitting time. The store opened at 9. Before I got through, I'm not bragging, I am not that good. I'm simply saying we ought to be the best in what we are. Before I got through, I was selling more clothes than any man who worked all day, and I was working half a day. Now, I'm simply saying, I could not stand it. I couldn't. I'd see a customer come in, and we'd all be lying. You know, most of the fellows would line up waiting, like barbers. Get beside the chair, and you choose the one you want. Not me. I took off the front door. Now, they didn't like me. But I sold more clothes. That's why they didn't like me. I'm simply saying, young people, listen, if God's called you to be a school teacher, a ditch digger, a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician, whatever it is, you say, by God's grace, I'm going to be my best and do my best. And that's what the writer said. He didn't say a fellow that doesn't hold on to the reins. He said a slack hand, one that barely holds on. One that keeps his eye open for the boss. I've seen those people. If you're here tonight, you're the kind that keeps your eye open for the boss, you ought to be ashamed. You're not a good testimony. You're not a good Christian. You are a lazy, what's the word? Sluggard. Is that a good word? It's a bad word. I'm looking for a bad word. Is that a good word to be a bad word? You are a lazy sluggard. Do your best. That's what he says here. All right, you written it down? Okay, first line. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame. Read it again, tell me what you think it teaches. He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that calls to shame. What do you think it says? Raise your hand, not calling. Yes, ma'am. What? Make hay while the sun shines. That's pretty good. Prepare for the future? That's a good thought. And both of you, I think, are very, very close to what it teaches. Now, of course, I've looked all this up in the original language, and it's very, very close to what it teaches. Here's what it teaches. It means do the job in each season that needs to be done in that season, and you'll succeed. So, let's put it this way. Do every season's job in season. How's that? Every season's job in season. How many of you put weed killer on the yard and fertilizer on the yard last fall? Would you raise your hand? How many did not? Okay. How many with me have dandelions? All right. That's what I'm talking about. In the original, it means dandelion. It simply means if last fall you had done what you ought to have done, you wouldn't have had those little things. But last fall I hadn't done what I ought to have done. And we haven't. Now, I don't know why. I think they're pretty. I mean this. I think they're pretty. Now, I'm not kidding. I think they're pretty.
Brother Hand had us over to Easter Day after my sermon last Sunday. I mentioned it, and so, and we went over to Easter. I said, Brother Hand had us over to Easter Day, and mentioned my sermon last Sunday. But anyway, I said, boy, listen, these flowers you planted in your yard really are coming up pretty. And I don't know, but now what I'm trying to say is this. The psalm that the proverb is saying, the writer of the proverb is saying, in each season you do your work if you want a good harvest. Now, how many of you ever, now I don't know much about crops here, but now I know a great deal about cotton. How many of you ever worked or lived around a cotton raising country? All right? When do you plant your cotton? Usually, where you came from. Anybody? Raise your hand, I'll call on you. Anybody? When do you plant your cotton? Yes, sir. May? All right. And when do you harvest the cotton? When do you pick it? When? August, September. Right. You fellows, you know something about cotton. What do you do in June, July? Huh? Sock it. Right. You sock it. That's right. Now, you know, there are some of you folks who go out and chop the cotton. That's not what it means. It means you chop the weeds out of the cotton. That's what it means. You chop it. All right. I suppose that you suppose that you don't plant it. Will you harvest it in August, September? No. Suppose you don't think, go out and pick it. No. Now you got to do everything in the season. You plant it in May, chop it in June, July, pick it in August and September. Everything in the season. What it really means is keep up. Keep steady and keep up. That's what it means. All right. Now let's look at verse 6. You know, to me, the Proverbs are some of the most interesting scriptures in all the Bible. Because they teach you how to be a decent person and have character. All right. Blessings are on the head of the just, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Blessings, now actually, the word just here, the word means right doers. Blessings are on the head of the right doers. And you might want to circle that. But violence covers the mouth of the wicked. What do you think that teaches? Well, that's simple. God blesses those who what? Who do right. All right, so write the next one down. What number is it? Five, right, number five. God blesses those who do right. But you never know how. I'll tell you what now. I did right last year in history, and I prospered. I worked hard. And I didn't copy, and I was honest, and I did right, and I flunked it. Now, I didn't get any blessed. Right, I'm trying to get one place, and now help me. After you're dead, your name will get better if you live right. I want to get the after death in there, not just folks remembering you. How about, yes, ma'am. Let your life be your testimony. That's really because there's something about death. About after you're gone. Let's say this way. The righteous will be remembered better after death. How's that? Been all right? The righteous will be remembered better after death. That means that when you're dead and gone, and you will be someday if the Lord says, when folks think about you, look. How many people do you know in the world that are revered, and we honor their day, we honor their birthday, and honor them once a year as a great hero because they made money? You know anybody? Just because they fell to bliss. Why do we honor George Washington? Why? He was part of our country. Why do we honor Abraham Lincoln? He was a great, benevolent president. Why do we honor Fanny Crosby? Let me illustrate. Who was the man who would not pray, who would not stop praying with his window open And because he would not stop praying, it was going to open, he was cast in the lion's den. Okay, who is the king that cast him in the lion's den? How many know? How many know who it was that was in the lion's den? Where's I? All right. That means that 120th of you remember the king that did it. Who was on top then? The king. Who's on top now? Daniel. You see what I mean? It means if you do right, nobody. That's one reason why. Well, I won't go into personality, but if you do right, if you do what's right, nobody may think you're anything now, but the next generation will honor you. That's what Jesus said. He said that to you that stone the prophets and then whitewash the sepulchre. You kill them while they're alive and then cherish their memory while they're dead. Let me ask you a question. Who was a free fellow who wouldn't bow down and worship a golden image and because of it got put in a fire furnace and were hated and tried to kill him? Who were the free fellows? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Who threw them in the fire furnace? How many honestly know, and you'd stake $100 on it, who the king was? How many would stake $100 on who the three fellows were? I see. Then it looks like the king's been going down in popularity, doesn't it? You see, he's a big boy then, he's a little boy now. How many know a fellow who one time was saved on the road to Damascus, don't tell me yet, and he was hated and kicked out of every town he ever went to, never stayed in a hotel, but always stayed in jail. He had to crawl for his life, run for his life, climb the wall for his life. And finally, in a certain city, he said, I fought a good fight, I kept the faith, I finished the course, and somebody had the fellow killed and martyred him. A king did it. How many know who the fellow was? Who was it? Paul. How many know the king that had him killed? Well, that's interesting. Who was it? Nero. Right. Van Pavner says, and only the way he alone can say it. He said there was a day when Nero had it good and Paul had it bad. But he said time will always pay off for righteousness. He said now folks name their children Paul and their dogs Nero. Nero was the most powerful man in the world. Paul couldn't even get himself out of jail. And we're still on Nero. 2,000 years later, about that many people out of 800 or 700 even know Nero's name. For all of us know Paul. How many of you know a boy named Nero? How many of you ever heard of a dog named Nero? Well, of course. Fine. But because the writer here said, the memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Isn't that good? Uh-huh. Did that encourage you then? Oh, okay. Well, there are many others we could discuss. How many know a fella? We'll get a little closer to home. How many know a fella who was kicked out of the Roman Catholic religion, who nailed some theses on a door, and who led the Reformation, and who was the founder of a great, used to be great, in some cases still is, Protestant denomination. And it's called the Father of Protestantism. What's his name? Martin Luther. How many know the name of the Pope that had him kicked out? No, it wasn't Pope Paul. His name was Pope. That's all you know, isn't it? Huh? Well, that's funny. It sounds like Solomon knew what he's talking about when he said, the memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Let me ask you a question. You want folks to remember you? Okay. The best way to do it is to write it and judge. Always turn to, okay, let's sit down to verse 8. The wise in heart will receive commandments, but a prating fool shall fall. The wise in heart will receive commandments, but a prating fool shall fall. What do you think that teaches? Raise your hand. Shut up and listen. What? What is it? What? The Lord will guide you? Okay, who else? Listen to counsel. A wise man will listen to counsel. All right, that's good. Take a little further than counsel. Listen to counsel on earth. Right. That's right. That's right. Okay. When I holler too loud at you, you're getting it, aren't you? All right. That's okay. As long as you get it, don't get how loud it is. Okay. Let's see then. The wise in heart will receive commandments. Okay, I say the wise obey. The wise obey. Now I'm going to teach something right now. That is the big thing all over America tonight. The big thing. You ever want to have some real fun and really see some monkeys? Don't go to the zoo. That's second step. Do what I did today. Drive through the campus of the University of Chicago. If the city ever finds out what's over there, Lake and Potter go out of business. I had to go to, I was in hospital that day and drove back down to there, and I enjoyed the first two or three things I saw. I just drove around and spent about 5 minutes just driving around, just looking. I never saw, really. They all got the monkeys out of the zoo to come and look what's over there. The stupid stadium they had the other day. And the ignoramus is, you know what, Ross? Everybody wants to be a chief and nobody wants to be an Indian. Everybody wants to do that which is right in his own eyes. And that's the main thing that makes anarchy. Young people, you ought to be taught to obey. Now, that isn't. Now, before I get to, I'm not criticizing Chicago University. I'm criticizing the parents that didn't make those kids set up and take care of medicine when they were 3 and 4 and 5 years old. Better still, 9 months old than a year old. I mean, everybody ought to be taught to obey. Obedience is better than sacrifice, said the Lord. That's one reason why it does everybody good to go in the army, I think. I mean, you don't think, I'm in the joy. Captain Fuller said to me, he said, you do this. And I said, Captain Fuller, sir, I don't think, shut up! You didn't get me if I'm in the thing. That's it. Now, what I want to do is knock the block off of them. But I thank God I learned to obey. I was taught to obey as a kid. That's one reason why some young folks who go to Bob Jones University, don't you let me hear you criticizing the rules when you get back. You might come back and yak all over this area all you want to about the sickness of Bob Jones University. You're just showing off your own stupidity. Did you hear what I said? You said, I don't like what you're saying. Yeah, here's one guy, you're not going to break my rule. You need somebody to say, stop, stop, there. Why? Just because I said to you. If your mama taught you that years ago, you wouldn't come back and criticize folks that try to discipline you. Look, it doesn't matter if the rule is no good. You ought to have to keep a rule. If you can't part your hair in the middle. I know folks in this town suing schools because they made them get hair cut. Suing them. And the parents are encouraging them. And those same kids rebel against their parents. I saw one of them not long ago that beat his father to a pulp. Obedience. Mama said, set up, set up, set up. Obey. Oh, listen, if you just get here, it'd make you such a fine. You'd be surprised. But you said, well, how does it make me a robot? It'd make you a better leader. It'd make you a better leader. No leader can be a successful leader if he's going to be a follower. Nobody can give commands if he's set in the seat of the obedience. You've got to obey first before you be a good leader. And so he says, obey. Okay, let's go further. You said, Brother Howes, before I go further, you said, you agree with everything Bob Jones University? That's not the issue. That's not the issue. The issue is, anywhere you go, you ought to abide by the rules and like it. Unless the rules are immoral. If they're moral, neither immoral nor immoral, then you abide by them. If they're moral about it, if they do not ask you to do something that's wrong to do, that's one reason why when I got in the army, I went down to Fort Hood, Texas. No, Fort Sam Houston, Texas. I was inducted. And so they said to me, and I had, the, really, you won't believe this, but I had, my hair was that high off my head and thick as a carpet. And I had set it, you know, and made it wavy, and I had long, I wish you could see the pictures of me when I was 17, 18 years old. I had long sideburns, not duck tail, but I had a lot of hair. And it was made to get our hair cut. So I went to the barber shop there at Fort Town, and the barber said, how do you want it cut? And I said, just want it trimmed on the sideburns, and like this. And all right. So I sat down in the chair. Well, no, I always sit in the barber chair. I went off to sleep and stepped away, and I got up, and he said, well, see how you like it. So I looked in the mirror, and there, it was about that long. Now, I didn't say I didn't like it. You had to like it. But I didn't like it. I said now. But I'm glad I had to do it. Obedience. You soldiers, remember? They said, say, okay, Father, take this load of brick and put it over here in this warehouse. And all day long, you'll carry this brick. Put it in the warehouse. And you say, I wonder why they want it. And you say, and you go, and you get a dead tired. You drag in, and you go to sleep, and the next day the sergeant says, oh, hey, these bricks over here in the warehouse. Put them right over you got them yesterday. They know how to make a man out of you. Or ruin your life. And you need it. That's what's wrong with this anarchy in our country. We burn our draft cards. You know what? You know, it's because of some of you sweet, fine, wonderful parents who think you love your child. Let me show you a verse. I don't think I'm going to get to it, but I want to show it to you. Look at verse 13. Boy, I like this one. In the lips of him that hath understanding wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him. Huh? Now, this is good theology. And a rod, and that don't mean pat him on the back either. A rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. You like that? Fella said, he's void of understanding. You know what this is. Better to make a better man out of you. It really will. There's one pastor used to say, if you just, down in Texas, had peach trees, that if you just cut those limbs off those peach trees and just use them on the kids, they'd have more fruit. Now, okay, now let's look at verse 9. He that walketh uprightly walketh surely, but he that perverteth his ways shall be known. Write this down for that one. Be sincere all the time. Be sincere all the time. If you'll be sincere all the time, as I've often said to young people, if you always tell the truth, you don't have to remember what you said last time. If you always tell the truth, you don't have to try to remember what you said last time. Here's what it means, if you want to read it. He that walketh uprightly or steadily, walketh truly. But he that perverteth his way, he that become a true person, he that walks true ways, he that walks over here, and back over here, and back over here, and back over here, and tries to live a double life. He's two persons. He's an old grouch at home and friendly on the job. He's crabby to his wife and friendly to his secretary. You're living two lives. Now the Lord is saying here, he thinks that a person ought to always be sincere, and that way you're only one person. And the right kind of Christian will be that way. Okay, now verse 10. We'll close with this one. He that winketh with the eye causeth sorrow, but a prating fool shall fall. He that winketh with the eye causeth sorrow, but a prating fool shall fall. Here's what that means. It means, let me write this down. Let's see if I can read it here.
tell nothing or everything. Tell nothing or everything. I sit down. Now listen, I'll be with me. You ever talk to anybody? And a brother says you and I talk a minute. Now watch me carefully now, because it's a big crowd, and watch me carefully. But Terry, you're doing a good job this first session. I think you're the best choir director I know.
Thank you.
You see what I'm getting at? You think I'm saying all I really want to say? Huh? You think I'm saying all I believe?
No.
Now what's it say? He that winketh with his eye. He that winketh with his eye, but a prating fool shall fall. And there's something else that's added in the original. It's like, and it goes about like this. It goes about this way. It says, but he that telleth his brother honestly beareth fruit. Now, it doesn't mean that everything you feel about everybody, you ought to say it. Let's suppose that Brother Fisk, for example, is, let's suppose it's something I don't like about him, but it's not important. Let's suppose that I don't like the way he combs his hair. Now, that doesn't make him any less effective, does it? Won't hurt his soul any? Won't hurt his job here? Now, does that mean I'm supposed to say, Brother Fisk, I don't like the way you comb your hair? No, I'm not. I shouldn't say it. But it'd be better to say that than say, your hair. What do I mean? Say it all, don't say any of it. It means like this. There's no somebody that had a, that would, look here. First, here, you think they're using for it, look here. Let's talk about Brother Hand so far. Okay. You know, Brother Hand is a, He's a nice guy. Thank you. You think, now, well, I said a lot, didn't I? A sly smile that says something folks can't interpret. Be an open book. Pastor Foster at Christian Fellowship Church called me on the telephone. He won't mind his anything. He came to our pastor's school at that moment every class. He called me on the telephone and he said, I want to talk to you. I went out to football restaurant and had lunch with him, and he looked at me and he said, one of the greatest things going on in America today is the pastor's school of the First Baptist Church. And he said, here's the thing I like most about you, Jack Howard. And he said, the thing I think is the greatest thing about the pastor's school, he said, you are an open book. What he said. He said, you didn't try to be subtle. You told everybody everything you believed. You didn't try to keep back that but they didn't, but you thought they wouldn't like. You were kind, but you just said, here is First Baptist. Look at us and see what we are. And that's where everybody ought to be. Now, I'm not saying I'm that way, but I want to be that way. I don't want anybody joining this church thinking we believe one thing till we get them in, then we'll try to keep them some by hook or by crook. I want you to know before you walk down this aisle what we believe. So say nothing is, you know, folks, that insinuation. You know, Brother Pierce, Brother Terry,
he's all right. He's all right.
I've had folks in my pastors that come to me so often and say, Brother Howard, I'm sorry, I don't care what to say.
Oh, boy.
Look, what the writer is saying here is you don't have to say all you know, but don't leave insinuations, don't wink, don't leave a sly smile, don't leave a bunch of unsaid things that people have to interpret, don't be hard to figure out, don't be hard to read. If you're going to say it, say it!
You don't have to say all you know. A lot of us say all we know quickly, but you don't have to say all you know.
But if you're thinking something, either don't say it, don't insinuate it, don't imply it, or say it all. You just look somebody, and the way they look, you say, now what are you thinking? What are you thinking of that? Huh? Now, that's what he's saying here. Here it is. He that winketh with the eye causeth sorrow, but a prating fool shall fall. Say none of it, or all of it. And don't talk with your eyes, talk with your mouth. Don't talk with your grin, don't talk with your winking, talk with your mouth. Thirdly, fly, suggestive statements. They can be interpreted, and look, can be interpreted according to the interpreter. And they'll get you in a lot of trouble. Young people, if you ever come back to church again, if you...